That bill passed the Senate. It's Senate Bill 171. Last Friday, on an 18-2 vote, two Republicans out of the four-member minority voted opposed. A lot of school districts have said it actually falls short of what they need, but of course, I think they'd be happy to take that over nothing. And in the House so far, the House leadership is saying some of the same things that Governor Parnell has been saying. Some of their arguments are that they feel the education, K-12 education, hasn't demonstrated that they have really made improvements, and so they don't necessarily want to give them more money until, say, they see more improvement. There are lobbyists from school districts. School boards are in Juneau actually right now this week, and they are trying to persuade legislators that they are, in fact, making gains. And, you know, you can sort of slice it and dice it all different ways, as you often can with various social sciences. In the end, it comes down to what people believe, how they feel. So we'll have to see what the House does. But right now, House leaders are signaling that they would prefer to go Parnell's suggested route of putting sort of one-time money in for education to cover something like increased energy costs, although it wouldn't be dedicated, but that the idea would be just to cover the costs. So we don't know where it'll go. Districts statewide are saying they're facing big budget deficits from a combination of factors, one of which is growth of expenses while they are not seeing growth in the base student allocation. They're also losing federal aid from the stimulus, and that's not an argument that anybody is promoting very publicly, because legislators made it very clear when they approved the stimulus money that they did not want districts coming back and asking the state to backfill it when it ran out. Declining enrollment's a factor in some districts. It's just a small factor here in Juneau. And then expenses such as health care that are growing faster than inflation are another pressure.
And how much traction is that particular argument that's been put forth, that this essentially is just kind of a permanent mandated increase, or will essentially amount to a permanent increase in formula funding?
Well, it's kind of interesting. It seems like we're sort of going backwards, because the base student allocation is a number that goes through a formula and finally spits out an amount of state aid that goes to each district. And then each district puts in, well, most districts put in some local match. And in the past, there have been a lot of legislators, in fact, there are some bills in now, they're not getting any attention, to inflation-proof the base student allocation. The base student allocation itself actually does not increase year to year. So it's interesting that now Governor and some House leaders are reluctant even to add money to that base student allocation, which, absent passage of legislation, doesn't increase year to year. And if you don't increase it, you know, inflation sort of moves ahead without it. And what was it, Jay Hammond? Inflation is the thief in the night who steals value. So I don't know. It really depends on your perspective. The other argument the governor and the House leaders, I hear them make a lot, is that education is sort of the very biggest chunk of the budget. And the argument goes that if we want to wrestle the operating budget under control, we should look at the biggest chunks of the pie, which are health and social services and education. That is definitely one argument. You know, one could also argue that just because other programs happen to serve a smaller constituency, whether it's, you know, Fish and Game Permitting Office, or it's a, you know, DEC's food inspections, should they be allowed to grow at a higher rate than education, or, you know, fly under the radar because they're smaller? So it's just the policy question legislators are wrestling with.
And on other issues, what has happened with the Senate's consideration of a possible tweaking of oil taxes?
The Senate is definitely right now feeling pretty strong in their resistance, I think, to House Bill 110, the governor's oil tax bill that the House passed last year. And they've been saying, you know, it's a good thing we got some consultants to do some study, because these consultants are coming back and telling us that House Bill 110 would have been a colossal mistake, gives away too much. And they're also kind of rebutting some of the claims behind that oil tax. For example, that North Slope oil jobs were drying up was a big claim behind House Bill 110 last year. Senators commissioned a study by the McDowell Group in Juneau that came back looking at data from the State Department of Labor that found that North Slope jobs did have a little downward blip in 2008 that was locally, largely due to the worldwide recession, but basically they're not down. And so they've been sort of debunking some of the claims. Last year was a bit of a one-sided discussion guided by the House, where we really heard from mostly industry. This year, you could say so far in the Senate, it's been sort of a one-side discussion debunking that. The senators say they will hear from the oil industry, that they'll give them as much time as they want to sort of rebut this. But at this point, I think the Senate is not really anywhere close to agreement with the House and the governor on what to do about oil taxes.
There was at least a hearing or two recently on a measure to perhaps return to the defined benefits retirement system, pension system. Is that getting a foothold, or was that a one-time occurrence?
Well, that's a good question. Senator Stedman had been one of the architects of the defined contribution plan, one of the key architects of that, that passed in 2005. And a few years later, I think it was maybe in 2009, I asked him once on a scale of 1 to 10 how he felt about giving employees an option to go back or bringing back the defined benefit system, with 1 being sure and 10 being over my dead body, and he said he was beyond 10. And we asked him this question again last week, and he said he was maybe down to about a 9, somewhat more open. The key thing is he's more open, and I think there are others who feel the same way. If it's revenue neutral, in other words, if it doesn't cost the state any more money. However, the Parnell administration has signaled that they are really quite opposed to going back to a defined contribution system, either for new employees or to give employees hired since it was phased out an option to kind of somehow buy back into the defined benefit system. So I'd say it's made a small bit of progress, and it might get some more hearings, but I'm not sure that it's really likely to pass.
How does the recent discussions on how to pay down the unfunded liability, how does that play into it, if at all?
There's separate questions, though they're certainly related. The unfunded liability is estimated now to be around $11 billion. That is, the assets in our pension funds exceed what's expected to be paid out over the next 25 years by about $11 billion. There's debate over in the Senate. There is a proposal to put about $2 billion into the PERS system. And they say if they do that, the state wouldn't have to continue forking over these large annual contributions. And right now we're doing it sort of year to year, where the state is just contributing whatever the actuaries say is needed. And that's up past $600 million for fiscal year 2013. And that number is going to projected to increase above $1 billion per year before it declines again. So that has legislators' attention. That's basically the crux of the issue. The governor has signaled that he's more interested in paying it year by year as we're doing now, or perhaps front-loading the payments, going up to $800,000 or $900,000 a year and doing a level pay system instead of having vary year to year. So that's a very much an open discussion right now.
And last week we talked a little bit about some of the travel expenses for the Parnell administration and some of the bills that they had racked up in travel outside the state and outside the country. Some expenses totaled up for lawmakers over the past year?
Yeah, there's the legislators report their pay and travel each year, and legislators are given a stipend for moving to and from Juneau for session, and they are allowed to move up to 5 tons of goods back and forth. And several of them take advantage of this and actually move, airlift their vehicles to Juneau. Senator Donnie Olson, who is from Golovin, outside Nome, he and his family moved here for $22,857 in 2011. And he's been the top mover for, I think, as many years as we've been tracking this. Representative Max Grunberg, who moved from Anchorage, spent $9,000 moving last year, and then from there it goes down. Juneau legislators obviously do not get a moving stipend. As far as travel, Senator Stevens, who's the Senate president, he was the most expensive traveler in 2011. He spent almost $63,000. And Senator Stedman was next. He spent about $47,000. Several of them have traveled to Norway to learn about Norway's fiscal regime. other trips, and certainly a lot of them do a lot of travel within Alaska that's pretty expensive. And it's just something that we like to track.
And once again, it's not any sort of indictment against these lawmakers in regards to whether or not these were for legitimate purposes, but these are just how much they spent over the last year.
Right. I just think, you know, it's a good thing that we have a system of government where this information is public. So since it's there and it's public, we like to take a look and make sure the legislators know that we are looking, so that they keep that in mind when they make their decisions.
In your analysis, who were the most frugal among the 60 lawmakers, besides the Juneau delegation?
Representative Mike Dugan. He did the least amount of travel. He is a Democrat from Anchorage. He billed $1,332 for travel. Other frugal legislators were Representative Kyle Johansson from Ketchikan, who spent just under $2,000, and Representative Sharon Cisna from Anchorage, who spent $2,771. The least expensive mover was Senator Bert Stedman. He only spent $541 moving, and he brings his boat back and forth from Sitka.
Rebecca Braun, thanks very much.
Thank you, Matt.